This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome, everyone, to The Infinite Consciousness this week, and thanks for listening. It's a holiday this weekend, and I hope you guys have had as good a holiday as me. Be a pleasure. Anyway, we have Roland Poirier with us tonight, and he's with NutriFix, an enzyme and probiotic company. How are you, Roland?
I'm doing great.
Thanks for being with us tonight. You've got a really good topic to talk about. I'm so excited to have you.
Yes, we're quite excited about some of the stuff we've found also, and just real excited to be able to share it with you.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are so they know who they're talking to and your company, and then we'll get on with the show.
Okay, great. I started out as a dairy farmer, my family's dairy farm background in Vermont, and I went on to university studying dairy food science, which was enabling me to be able to make yogurt and cheese and all kinds of fun stuff that way. But dwelling into that a bit deeper, I decided that there'd be some tremendous benefits if we could use those products as a carrier for probiotics, which is something we researched about 5 years ago, the friendly bacteria that our digestive system needs, and saw some pretty amazing things happen when we get specific DNA profiles on bacteria and ask these bacteria to do specific stuff for us. So my intense work was done with dairy cattle nutrition. A lot of my customers would come to me and find baby calves dying from diarrhea and digestive disorders and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So it became kind of a project to determine how we can stop this kind of things happening, and brought us to doing fecal culturing, really exciting and interesting stuff there, and autopsies. And predominantly we found one specific bacteria that was the culprit and identified it as Clostridium difficile. And I had a bit of a theory back then, thinking that if I was able to bring in some beneficial bacteria, change the pH in that diet to beneficial bacteria really got aggressive, could I battle for space and food against the nasty bacteria? And lo and behold, with a few challenging mixes, we came across a mix that really seemed to get us some specific benefits and save a lot of these baby calf lives. And at that time, my wife was going through some challenges, and she said, you know, saving baby calf lives are a good and wonderful, but you know, humans need this also. So we stepped it up to a pharmaceutical grade and started marketing the product, and just real excited about what we're seeing. I know there's been a number of different probiotic products in the past, and a number of different quality levels and identifications on probiotics, and one of the most probably known strains is Lactobacillus acidophilus, which is the bacteria we find in yogurt. So I thought it would be a great thing if we could take yogurt, dehydrate it, get it in a powder form, super concentrate it, put it in a capsule so it's easier to take, and get some real benefits with convenience and results.
Mm-hmm.
by introducing bacteria that way. So our research brought us to a company in Canada that introduced yogurt to North America in the 1920s. And I felt that one of the things that I wanted was, you know, it's good to have beneficial bacteria in there, but I want a specific function. I want this bacteria to do X, Y, and Z. And X was survive in different pH levels. It's one of the problems we have with our traditional probiotic type products, our live bacteria type products. They just can't survive in the stomach pHs that we're seeing a lot of people have with acid reflux and
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing. So this company was able to give me a DNA profile on specific bacteria, which guarantees an aggressive level and a survivability in pH. And we feel strongly that that's the difference between a probiotic that does work and a probiotic that doesn't work.
Now, I don't really know how to word this, so you have to help me get this across. But is that some kind of thing that was genetically modified, or was it a natural thing?
It's a natural. If you understand how yogurt is worked, basically mm-hmm. you choose a strain of bacteria from the dairy cow, from the milk itself. You culture it in a medium, which actually allows it to grow. So that means you give it the food it needs. The pH is, you adjust the pH, so that's correct. The cultures grow. That gives you that thickening effect, and mm-hmm. then you stabilize it with a temperature difference. You put it in the refrigerator, and it doesn't grow anymore. So it allows you shelf life. So, no, there's nothing in here. Matter of fact, the products that I feel are the best are the ones that are certified organic.
Mm-hmm.
And to be certified organic, you have to prove non-GMO, non-modified genetics. So,
do they do that right now?
Absolutely. Most of the companies that are in it and are serious about it, are doing that.
How do we recognize that on the label?
It should be right on the label, organic, certified organic, GMO-free.
Okay.
One of the things, like the organic products, no matter if you're eating a tomato or yogurt or probiotic, are regulated by the local organic certification people in New York. It's NOFA. In Vermont, it's NOFA Vermont. In California, I know specific statewide areas are regulated that way. And in order to pass the regulation, you have to prove from the manufacturing standpoint a non-GMO status.
Now, for a lot of the listeners, I want to make sure they understand when we say non-genetic or genetically modified food, it's not just something that makes more food grow. It's something that actually has, I think, been proven to cause cancers and stuff, hasn't it?
Yeah, there's certain research studies that are showing that, and some of the larger pharmaceutical companies that actually sell pesticide brands, that sell herbicide brands to commercial food producers, the food producers say, wow, you know, I got a problem with a specific insect, or I have a problem with a specific weed. So they genetically modify the seed itself to be able to combat against that specific specific ailment that they're faced with.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a pretty scary topic. And unfortunately, in a lot of cases, the profit is put ahead of the possibilities on what, you know, those research.
Yeah, it's getting serious, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's see, what was I going to ask you about that? Oh, I wanted to know, what is, you've given us all this great information about having all these good cells, but what does that mean to us?
Okay,
cures cancers, that cures heart disease, cures all kinds of stuff, doesn't it?
Well, unfortunately, when you start talking about live-friendly bacteria, it's hard to say on a label or in a research documentation, or I mean in an advertisement,
mm-hmm.
that it cures anything. And the reason for that is the FDA regulations.
Okay, technicalities.
Right. And you cannot patent a live bacteria. It comes from nature. Okay, I can't patent lactobacillus acidophilus. So when we go to market with that, these pharmaceutical companies like to protect themselves, understandably. Being able to go, okay, I'm going to spend $300 million on researching a product so I can say that it will cure this.
So let's say that it has potential to do good things.
It has potential to do good. And what we're saying is we're supposed to be getting this stuff from our food. We're supposed to be
mm-hmm.
getting the enzymes, the healthy enzymes. We're supposed to be getting all these bacteria from our food. And because of the way our food is handled, we're just not getting that. When we use herbicides and pesticides and petroleum-based fertilizer, a lot of people don't realize that commercial fertilizer that's put into the tomatoes, that's put into all the vegetables, that's put into the crops that the animals eat, is a petroleum base. And
really?
It does an extreme pH imbalance in the soil to the point where the natural microbes, the natural insects, the worms and grubs that actually make the soil fertile actually die off. and
you know,
not...
I've noticed there aren't any worms in my garden ever. I've wondered why.
That's why.
So what do I put in there?
Well, you got to go back to an organic. What you do is a pH test, and this is something I do. One of the services that we offer as a company is an iridology reading, which is a whole other night for a whole other topic. But the first thing we do is a pH test, and that's what you should do with your soil also. Those of you that have swimming pools, before you put in the expensive chemicals that's going to clean the pool, you always do a pH test. The pH tells you where do you have to go to get the optimum performance from the product you're putting in there. If it's very alkaline, then you want to put something in there to bring it back to an acid
mm-hmm.
state. In your pool, you don't want the bacteria to grow. So you create an environment in a very acid or a very alkaline state of not allowing the bacteria to grow. In your garden, you want to adjust the pH so that bacteria are very aggressive. They want to grow. They want to multiply very quickly. So when you get the pH adjusted in your garden, then the insects and the live microbes and the bacteria love it there. They'll do a fantastic job growing the vegetables. They will then transfer from the soil to the vegetable itself, which we're supposed to eat vine-picked, making those bacteria transferred over to us.
Right.
Unfortunately, when our tomatoes are grown in California, and I'm doing my shopping in northern New York, there may be a three-month spread between the time that vegetable is picked. It is sometimes what they call CO2 gas that is then completely, during transportation is when it is matured and ripened. And by the time I get it and get it home, there's not much left to it. So ultimately, the best is right off the vine. Fortunately, we just don't have those options year-round in most places. So in your garden, we do a pH test, which starts feeding the bacteria that's in your garden.
How do you do that test?
It's simple. You go to your pool supply people
mm-hmm.
and pick up a pH sample. Or you go to your natural health food store and pick up a pH strip.
How do you put it in the dirt, though?
Pardon me?
How do you put it in the dirt?
Well, there's a little cup there that what you would do is put a little bit of dirt in,
mm-hmm.
mix a teaspoon of water in there so you have like a slurry mix,
mm-hmm.
and the acid state of the soil will transfer to the water.
Well,
the water will go into
the pH in the water matter?
Yeah, that's it. That's a big thing. One of the things when I talk to someone that's having some health problems is making sure that they get enough water in their diet a day. Now, what I recommend is to take your total body weight, convert that over to ounces, divide that by 50%, and that should be your water intake for a day. So let's say you weigh 100 pounds, convert that over to ounces, it's 100 ounces, you should be taking in 50 ounces of water a day. Water has a tremendous alkalining effect. Most water is at about a 7 pH.
Water in the dirt, if you mix the water together with the dirt, does it measure the pH in the water or the pH in the dirt?
Well, like I say, water is fairly neutral. In most cases, some wells are
acidic.
Oh, I see.
Gotcha.
But
okay.
If it's 7 and the soil is acidic, it's going to tip it off to those
fields.
Okay, there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, somebody just sent me a message and said, are genetically modified food labeled as genetically modified food or is it passed off as normal?
It's passed off as normal, unfortunately.
Oh,
yeah,
dear.
In most cases, and hopefully our regulatory people will change that and go, you know. And I know in certain parts of the country, the consumers in Vermont are very good for this. You know, we want to know what's in our food. We're starting to put a big demand on that part of the thing, and that's what we need to do at the ground root level. Is I want to know what's going in this food, and so to make it genetically modified. I know there was laws at the state level that just passed saying that we want to know if there's BST, the hormone, in the milk.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certain marketing agencies, certain milk processing plants that say, yeah, we promise that it's not in here. And the consumer is smart enough to go, okay, we don't mind paying another 25 cents for milk if we know it's in there, you know.
Right.
And if we know that 25 cents is going directly to the dairyman for, you know, for that product, it's... You cannot pay too much for good health, you know.
Well, what are those bills? Do you know? 7 State 742 and House Bill 256, right?
Yeah, I believe it. I don't have those in front of me right now.
I'm sure that's what the numbers are, but that's what the people need to be looking for, right?
Right, yep.
Vote for those or against them?
Oh, absolutely for those.
Okay.
Yeah, because those are doing a couple of things. Finding most of these diseases that, especially digestive diseases, stuff like Crohn's, colitis, irritable bowel disease, lots of times brought on by the overuse of antibiotics. About 50% of all meat production in the United States, I'm talking about beef cows, I'm talking about pork and chickens, it has been traditionally a process to apply antibiotics as a prevention. Now, to me, that is totally ludicrous.
Right.
You know, I don't want these animals to get sick, so I'm going to give them antibiotics before that happens. And what happens, these bacteria, they're just like you and I, Eva. Their job is to stay alive. And if something keeps pounding on them to kill them off, they're going to mutate. They're going to adjust their environment. They're going to adjust their ability to accept those antibiotics and you know, not be affected by them. So we have a few of them that are very, very smart. One of them, Clostridium difficile, the one we talked about before, going to be, I anticipate, a real problem and has started to crop up in, Canada had some outbreaks of it.
And how do we know if we have what kind that we have?
Pardon me?
Can they test for those right now?
Absolutely, yep. You do a fecal culture. And Clostridium difficile is, you know, quite common in everyone. But it's the good bacteria, the Acidophilus that we carry, and the Bifidiums that we carry, and the friendly bacteria that keep it in check. Because all these bacteria do the same thing. They fight for space on intestinal lining, and they fight for food. And when you wipe out all the good stuff and the bad stuff is not affected by antibiotics, they really take over. Now, I know I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I know there was more people that had died from Clostridium difficile in Canada than the SARS outbreak.
Really?
And to me, you would think that would be something the media would pick up on,
uh-huh.
But the local hospitals are not putting C. difficile on a death certificate. They're putting dying from complications of, you know.
Wow.
So,
so what could we do to fix that?
Well, that's again goes back to making sure we have the right bacteria in us when we take antibiotics, and if we're not eating off the vine, supplementing those bacteria and enzymes.
What kind would we take for that?
Pardon me?
What kind would we take for that?
Well, what I like to do is target three different areas of that digestive tract, right from the oral cavity, your mouth, down through the colon. Now, at different parts of that digestive tract, the bacteria like it at slightly different pHs. For instance, Acidophilus you're going to find throughout. So that's like one of the predominant ones. That helps you with a number of different things, including creating a natural antibiotic for whatever it might need. It also helps greatly in the digestion of food. So that would be a good one. And if we looked at probiotics in our health food store, we would find that one. That one has traditionally been a good one. The other one that I like is one called Lactobacillus rhamnosus. Rhamnosus loves it in your lower intestinal tract, intestinal lining, large and small intestinal tract. Rhamnosus, some of the research we just saw recently, shows there's a direct link between gingivitis and heart problems, heart challenges, and rhamnosis.
With which one?
Lactobacillus rhamnosis. And that one has done.
You have too much of that.
No, you don't.
Do.
But that's the one you want to be looking for.
You want to have a lot of that one?
Yes.
And what do you take to get a lot of that one? Is that what you buy at the store?
Yeah, that one there is tough to go and find in foods. Certain specific foods are high in it, certain fruits. But that one is kind of tricky to...
Do you sell these?
Well, what I've done is put a mix together that I feel is the best. We've
uh-huh.
put a mix together of Acidophilus, Rhamnosus, and the Bifidiums. The Bifidiums are great for the colon area. That's where a lot of the foods are broken down when they hit the colon. So I felt that those three different targets of the digestive tract would give us the most benefit and
uh-huh.
create a broad spectrum, what we call... competitive exclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Competitive exclusion is, you know, you can get into millions of dollars researching it, but it's very simply put by, let's say you're invited to a barbecue. There's been 50 other people invited. 75 of them show up.
Right.
the people that know what's going on, that are alert, that are not aggressive, that understand, they're probably not going to get fed that day. And it's probably not a big deal for that one incident. But if that happens every day,
mm-hmm.
there's going to be some people that starve and die off.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing on the bacterial level. If there's not enough food there, and other bacteria are more aggressive, and in most cases, friendly bacteria are very aggressive. They like to establish themselves. And in a lot of cases, these pathogenic bacteria, let's say you go to the restaurant and you get salmonella. In most cases, that strain is really not that aggressive. But if you've just taken antibiotics, there's no other competition for it, nobody up in line to take the food, it can take over quite easily.
Right. Well, let's go back to those specific diseases you were talking about and what to do. I really like that.
Okay. Anything associated to digestion, let's say acid reflux. Acid reflux is very simply a imbalance of your pH. Your pH is off balance a bit, so the live bacteria, the friendly ones, are kind of lazy. They don't like to grow there.
Mm-hmm.
So that pH level comes from the way we eat, okay? Most of the time it's fast food.
Right.
Go have a donut and see what your pH does.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that breaks down quickly, what we call non-structured carbohydrates, which is usually high in sugar, and break down very quickly, have a tendency to kick the pH balance over to a very acid state. At this state, a lot of the bacteria, friendly ones, just don't like it there. So they're not aggressive. So that kicks you into, you know, going to your doctor and he's like, I got acid reflux, what do I do? He gives you a pharmaceutical prescription to drop all the acid in your stomach and you get relief. But to me, it's not really addressing the core problem. The core problem is the bacteria, environment for the bacteria. The pH isn't right for them to be very aggressive.
Is it so, basically just a state of inflammation in some place or another?
When we start stepping it up to more of a disease level, yes, you're absolutely right. We take acid reflux up into irritable bowel disease. Irritable bowel disease stepped up goes to Crohn's colitis. Those issues, you know, when you start looking at those issues, yes, those are inflammatory type problems. And again, they're all related going back to, you know, eating right, making sure the stuff, the right probiotics, the right bacteria, and the right enzymes are there. It's amazing what we can do with these types of challenges with a little slippery elm, some good digestive enzymes, probiotics, and some aloe vera. You know, it's amazing what that'll do for
some aloe vera?
Yeah.
What should people take?
How much?
Yeah. I mean, I know you can't diagnose and treat here, but
right.
There are some guidelines that people can refer to, I'm sure, right?
Yes, and I don't have the name of the company in front of me right now that does our supply work, but there's a company in Florida, I believe it was, that. And, you know, what I've done is I've taken a look at that specific product, aloe vera. Now, we all know it works. Put it on a burn, you can see an induced healing process.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of us don't really ask the question, why? You know, and I'm kind of one to go, okay, why does this work? And my research took me to a research facilities in France. And what they've done is they've looked into what exactly makes aloe vera work. And what we found is a sugar that the plant, the aloe vera, that, has already digested
mm-hmm.
called mannose. Now, back in 1993... You might find this interesting. There was a German scientist by the name of Dr. Blobel, finally got his hands on a microscope strong enough to be able to single out a human cell. And on the outside of that cell, he identified some hair-like follicles. And the scope took him into researching what were those follicles and what did they do. And what he found was there were a number of, I believe he identified 8, different
of glyconutrients.
Sugars. Exactly, glyconutrients.
Uh-huh. And receptors.
One of those was mannose.
Uh-huh.
And mannose comes from aloe vera. I mean, that is
okay.
One of the sources.
Yeah, I believe in glyconutrients.
Oh, absolutely. And
yeah.
To me, that really kicks in the communication between the cells, the ones that need to be repaired or the one that needs to be evacuated, you know, those sort of things. So when you look at aloe vera, you know, mannose, it's a source of mannose,
mm-hmm.
which is that's why it heals. That's why it has a great healing effect. So
now, when someone takes enzymes, they need cofactors.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit and what somebody would need when they take different ones and why?
Well, to me, a cofactor would be basically a carrier. How do I, you know, it becomes a source of the actual enzyme. When I would ask someone with those kind of a challenges, I would say, you know, what's your basic diet? What do you like to eat? What do you normally eat? And, you know, you can class enzymes into basically three classes, the metabolic enzymes, which do most of the work in the blood tissues and organs as far as, you know, repair, rejuvenation, cell rebuilding, those sort of things. Then the food enzymes we're supposed to get from our raw food, like I was mentioning before, bromelain is sourced from pineapple. You know, those, when we're picking off the fruit, off the vine, or mm-hmm. picking out of the ground, those sort of food enzymes is what we're supposed to be getting, and unfortunately we're not. And then there's the list of digestive enzymes, which to me fall into kind of a supplement area. Let's say, for instance, the food categories. If you're eating a lot of fat, there's a good chance that you'd be in a lower state of lipase. So depending on what you're eating is what your body's going to build, is what your body's going to create to digest. And it's very, it takes a lot of energy to create these enzymes. So if you're not getting them from your fruits and vegetables, and you're eating those foods that are create a need for enzymes, then your body has to actually create those. For instance, proteinase. If you're eating a lot of meat, you're going to create a need for proteinase. Amylase, good for eating starches, which we see a lot of that. We eat over there donuts in our fast foods. Dairy foods, you know, some people are lactose intolerant, so we have a need for lactase. And then, of course, mm-hmm. sugars, you have the sucrose. And, you know, it, based on what you're actually eating, what you like to eat, creates the need for those specific enzymes.
Does it matter if you take them on a full stomach or an empty stomach?
Yes. The thing with enzymes, they are a catalyst. They make things happen. I really get excited when I talk about enzymes because they're the doers. And if you take them on an empty stomach, they actually go right to the bloodstream very quickly, and they're actually
what
not...
What is quickly?
On about 3 minutes.
Okay.
So they're not really at the target point. They're not used. So either with your food, sprinkle them on, replace them with salt or pepper, you know. You know, the habit you got about the shaking of the salt pepper on top of your food, replace them with enzymes, and you'll see some amazing things happen. The first thing you're going to find happen is you're going to, if
you
you're monitoring
the difference?
Pardon me?
Does it have a taste?
No, very, very, very little taste. Like I say, if you're getting it in a natural form through the fruits and vegetables, then you're carrying like pineapple would have a, you know, the only thing you taste would be the pineapple.
Okay. All right, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's all right. you know, there are two ways to preserve and replenish our enzyme level, by eating the raw food or taking the supplements. So when I look at a supplement, it's not like looking at a probiotic supplement. When I look at a probiotic supplement, I want to see two or three specific bacteria that do two or three specific things. I've seen some probiotic bottles that have like 18 different bacteria on it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's okay with the enzymes, not okay with the probiotics, for the simple fact that if you're not eating an enzyme, if you're not eating a food that requires an enzyme,
mm-hmm.
it's really not going to hurt you. And then with a large, broad-spectrum level of enzymes in your supplement, you'll use the ones that you need and pass the rest. With bacteria, you have a tendency to create almost too much competition with too many different strains,
mm-hmm.
and not only in your body, but in the storage capsule itself.
Interesting.
So you get more stability with fewer.
So the optimum would be that three.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, that's what we're seeing. There may be, as we're researching it more, there may be four.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that listeners want to understand is the number is very important also. Like, it's very expensive to do, like 10 years ago when we started this, it was very expensive to do immune research on humans. So we took the dairy cow again. We started using her with natural probiotics. Like, I would take yogurt, feed it back to the cow. I would take yogurt, dehydrate it, super concentrate it, feed it back to the cow. So it was very natural for her to do that. And it's very easy to monitor cow immune response because we get to test her milk. She's outputting milk. And one of the tests we do is what we call a somatic cell count. That tells me how healthy the cow is. If the cow is like in the millions, then the milk is actually infected with something. If the cow is, the milk is in the 100,000 level, then the somatic cell count is in a very healthy level. So I would be able to take a cow that wasn't healthy, test the milk, give her a line of these probiotics at certain levels, and test the milk again and see a response. And we found that at 10 billion live cells per day, the cow dropped the somatic cell count by about 25 to 35%. And we continually tested her and did that and felt very comfortable that that was happening. So we're taking that number, calculated back to human body weight, and said, okay, at 10 billion live cells on a daily basis, we should be able to do two things. Our goal is to do two things here to get optimal health. Number one, activate immune system and create competitive exclusion. And at that 10 billion mark, in a human is where we're seeing that happen.
So it strengthens the immune system, does something to it.
Well, the immune system to me is like any other functioning organ in your body. 70% of it is affected by your digestion. So that's where you put in most of the crap. Most of the pathogens, the nasty stuff, if you're going to take in something, that's where it's going to go in. So 70% of the digestive immune system is in the digestion system. So when we start to look at, okay, how is this affected, this is where we're going to be ingesting these 10 billion live cells, then it's like any other organ in the body. It needs to activate. It needs to flex. It's like a regular muscle.
Mm-hmm.
If it sits idle, it doesn't flex. It doesn't activate quickly. It doesn't release quickly. It becomes lazy also. So by taking 10 billion live cells into you every day, your immune system really, our research is showing it really is not able to identify a specific pathogen or a specific challenge or a specific problem. What it identifies is a growth pattern in speed. How fast is this specific bacteria growing? And when you correct your pH and you throw in a healthy acidophilus in there that grows quite quickly, that sparks an immune response. Your immune system activates. It identifies what that is. It identifies it as acidophilus, which is very friendly, and it starts to build antigens against that sort of thing. But while it's activating, it's checking out everything else that's going on.
Well, remind me to talk about yeast, somebody messaged you a question.
Yes.
A lot of people has been emphasizing colon cleanses. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the best, the best ones are, the ones that you actually fast, kind of upset your whole microflora at that point. And, one of the things that I do is an iridology reading. And in your iris, I can tell through the digestive wreath, a history on your activation.
Yeah, it's like a map of
your
body,
release.
Right?
Pardon me?
People that don't know. It's like a map of your internal body.
Right. Yes, exactly. It's a map of your internal body. And if you're not eating properly, one of the questions I asked one patient here was, how regular are you? Oh, I'm very regular, every Tuesday.
Right, right.
And I'm like, wow, I'm recommending twice a day. So when you have those type of large variances between someone that evacuates twice a day or someone that evacuates once a week, there's going to be an area in that digestive tract that's collecting that stuff, okay?
Right.
Most of our challenges in digestion is in elimination. We don't have proper elimination.
Yeah, and I don't... Sorry, just don't want people to realize, forget about this. People don't realize if your stomach is hard,
yeah,
and you can't palpate it,
right,
it's not supposed to be that way. People call it beer bellies and stuff.
Right.
You know, it's not supposed to be that way. It's gas from all these problems.
Yes.
You know, enzymes will fix that.
Yeah, so that's one of the things, you know, when you ask yourself, you know, do I need enzymes, you know? If you're having excess gas, excess discomfort, bloating, heartburn, constipation, diarrhea, anything that's not normal, then enzymes, that is a sign of a deficiency in enzymes. So let's say you're having those, and you go, okay, what do I normally like to eat? Well, I'm eating all the donuts and the beer and the chips and that sort of stuff. Then you target those enzymes that breaks down whatever you're eating. If you want to specifically do it with fruits and vegetables, which, you know, is the best. But we don't have time for that. We're not accessed to those kind of fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, that's my next question. What do they take?
Go to a good broad-spectrum digestive enzyme.
And do you have that too? Do you sell those products or just the yogurts right now?
We're working on a line of enzymes right now, but we're strictly probiotics at this point. The enzymes are not as DNA specific as the probiotics, and they are very clearly identified that each one does a specific thing.
Are you familiar with the Mechazyme brand?
Oh yeah.
Is that a good brand?
That's a good brand. Yep.
Okay. What do you recommend somebody take? How many a day? What is a good dosage?
Normally the capsules that we look at like are 0.45 grams. And 2 to 4 grams. That's the great thing about these health food type products. It's not like a pharmaceutical grade, medicine. If one or two capsules aren't working, double up the dose, triple up the dose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I usually recommend. I look at it as a normal daily dose is what's on the bottle. But if it is a organic product or, you know, and of course I can't be too broad with this recommendation, but go to a medicinal level. I mean, they don't tell you that on the bottle, but if it's strictly organic and you overdo it, then most of the cases it'll just pass through you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like our probiotic product. If your child, you know, was getting into the bottle, opened it up and down the whole thing,
right.
She might get, the diarrhea for 12 hours or so, but
mm-hmm.
really no long-lasting effects for a majority of the population. So if a little bit is not working, and in a lot of cases you kind of go, you know, you only have one shot to convince someone that this is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you almost have to do it with that mindset that, you know, if this doesn't work for me, then I either didn't get the right target of enzymes or the dose wasn't enough. So to answer your questions, whatever's on the label, and most of the time it's a 4.5 gram capsule, is like a medium-sized capsule, and two of those usually work. Open the capsules up, dump around your food,
All right. What about the cofactors that go with those and the proteolytic enzymes and trying to eat up inflammation?
Well, again, those are more specific to a certain ailment, and one of the areas that we're researching right now, and really I don't have a lot of the answers for that part of it, but a very important part of it. To give you an answer, a qualified answer that would correct you, I'm really not comfortable with that right now.
Do you know somebody, some place they could look?
Yeah, one of the things that are very good online is the med. Let's see, I've got that right here.
While you're looking for that, somebody wanted to know: are you concerned about Codex?
Prodex?
Codex.
Oh, Codex.
Yeah.
Again, you have to take a serious look at that and determine: is it a marketing? Is it a market managers that are pushing that, or is there some research? And what I'd like to do is do two things. I search for the information to make a judgment on that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I research, do it again. Give me more information that I can make.
Do you need information? There's a guy that I know.
Yeah.
He's a lawyer up in Washington. Jeez, what is his name? I can't think of it, but I'll send it to you.
Okay.
He has a group called citizens.org that's real involved with the National Foundation of Alternative Medicine, and he knows. He's researched it.
Okay,
if you're
great.
Interested, I'll connect you.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyway, I think Dan
had that was Medline.
PubMed. Right.
Indexed for Medline. Some really good stuff in there. If you were to do a search on probiotics and enzymes 10 years ago, you know, three or four might have popped up.
Mm-hmm.
If you do a search today, there's, you know, we're into the thousands, and I think that's real exciting. It's saying that there is something to this, and what we have to do is kind of fizz through the gray areas and determine, you know, what we're looking for and get a response at least 90% of the time. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I'm actively involved in is an international symposium on probiotics 6 years ago in Montreal. You know, we talked a lot about theory. What will these probiotics do? And this is, you know, this is an organization of worldwide researchers.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 years ago, we started talking about theory, but we talked more about clinical application, clinical trials. And this past year, some amazing stuff came from that. And that a lot of that was published on the PubMed.
Tell us
about
it.
Dietary deprivation on lactic acid bacteria, food probiotics. I mean, one of the line of probiotics, and people that are challenged with AIDS today too, Saccharomyces boulardii. That is an amazing yeast. It's non-pathogenic and non-colonizing, so you don't have to worry about it taking over. But it is sourced from mango fruit, and our researchers were, I say our researchers, the people that I'm working with, were in Indonesia, and they witnessed villagers with cholera. You know, witch doctor was out there making his brew, and of course the researchers were watching what was going on, and within 3 days they had relief from the effects of cholera.
No way.
Yeah, and so our researchers are going, what is in there that makes that happen? So we identified the active ingredient was Saccharomyces, which is a yeast family, but identified as the researchers identified it, Boulardii. A supernatural anti-diarrheal.
So you just eat, what'd you say, mango?
Mango, yeah. Mango's great for that.
For diarrhea?
Yep.
Amazing. I never would have thought that. I would have thought it would have been acidic and made it worse.
No. But that's one of the probiotics that's in our mix. We were able to encapsulate that so it doesn't fight or degrade the live bacteria, but it's one of the four things in our recipe. So
tell us some more stories. That's a good one.
You know, it's amazing these foods that how, you know, you really don't know how bad you're eating until you know what is absolutely the best way to eat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think being involved in the dairy industry first, when I growing up watching my father and his father and his grandfather worked the farm and the garden and stuff. You know, we were all organic three generations ago. But when we put a demand on these farmers, when we put a demand on these food growers to make tons and tons of food and make it very, very cheap, we've asked them to do a whole bunch of things. We've asked them to get away from organics. The pesticides, the herbicides, the commercial fertilizers stepped in. And then all of a sudden, we're seeing, you know, where one field would grow 6 tons of corn silage. Now we're seeing a record-breaking 32 ton on 1 acre.
Well, you know, it's a problem. I mean, that gets out of price for the average person. So that they need to do something about the economics of the people's pay,
yes,
as well as the farmers being able to support themselves.
Well, that's it.
They don't make it, you know, work for everybody.
That's right. And one of the things that we're heavily involved is in organics, organic research. You know, a lot of the productive agricultural people are like, you know, well, I really don't know if I can grow an acre of corn without the pesticides, herbicides. And so what we're doing is starting them off on a small plot, getting them educated that the three things have to happen. You have to feed the soil. Soil feeds the plant feeds you. If there's something broken in that chain, then that's where we start to see all these challenges. And if you look back at history over that period from the late 40s on to present time, where those production levels have gone from 6 to 8 ton to the acre. I'm picking on corn
That's
right
amazing.
Now, but to 32, then if you track all these degenerative digestive diseases, I'm talking about arthritis, I'm talking about the sugar diabetes, Crohn's colitis, they've escalated in a proportionate amounts to the actual production of those crops.
So here we're talking again about starving food and genetically modified seed, right?
Well, a little bit different than genetically modified seed. I'm talking about commercially commercial production, petroleum-based fertilizers.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So.
I just can't believe that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So what is relief for it?
Well, the best relief is to eat right. Okay, look if you can grow a garden, that is the absolute best.
I mean,
picking it off the vine, putting it on a sandwich, that's the absolute best, you know.
For you guys, what is the solution for the farmers to be able to do what they got to do?
First of all, there has to be a coalition at the consumer level that will say, look, we want to know what's going on in our food, and yeah, we want it cheap, but we will pay more if you can guarantee us that there is no pesticide, there is no herbicide, there is no genetically modified source there. And I'm not talking about paying twice as much, but I'm talking about paying a premium of maybe 15 to 20%, which is what would motivate these producers to go, okay, I'll give you that guarantee, and I will take, because what the first thing they look at is bottom line production. They look at how many dollars of input am I going to get from 1 acre? And when they start looking at organics, that automatically drops. Okay, we have to look at that as being part of the cycle and being paid for. But as a consumer myself, I like to go to the source. Like we eat grass-fed beef.
Mm-hmm.
I go to that guy that's growing it. I see those animals. I see how they're taken care of. And I see that it's friendly and it's organic and it's humane. I don't mind paying an extra dollar a pound for meat, you know. We take those things and take them for granted because of our time situation, you know.
You know, a lot of the quantum physicists has proven that something that had an intention behind it leaves that energy there even when it dies.
Yeah.
So if a cow or whatever animal it is that we're eating wasn't, and they've also proven that, I had a guy on my show last week that studies neurotransmitters, and he's proven that cows and horses and dogs have the same neurotransmitters for emotion that we do. So they feel the same thing we do.
Oh, yeah.
And so if they're angry and living miserable life, then that they've proven that's going to carry through to their meat.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things that we monitor in this is exciting new field too is the CLA levels. When I look at any food, I look at the acid profile, and one of the research that we just came out from this symposium was CLA levels. That's conjugated linoleic acid. One of the acid profiles in the meat is extremely high on a cow that's out grazing on green pasture.
Really?
Yes.
And I believe it.
And if you see those CLA levels, it is one of the most highest anti-carcinogens that we've seen in our food chain. It is an anti-cancer agent. So directly related to getting the grass from the field full of those glyconutrients into the cow. Cow does a good job digesting it in a natural state. We ingest that part of her. We're taking in a better, taking almost like a health food through the meat.
I bet also it would have a, if an animal is standing there being abused, it's going to have a lot of norepinephrine.
That's it. Yeah.
You know, which
stress
is also
levels.
Going to cause a whole
You're
lot
right.
of problems. And cortisol.
Yes. And the stress levels through the roof will actually change the taste of that meat.
Really? Would it make
and
it
And I
tough?
Can tell it. I can tell by the smell when it hits the fry pan.
Really?
Yes. You know,
what's the difference?
The biggest difference is more of a rancid type smell. When we start looking at the bacteria levels and the acid profiles being absolutely optimum, the shelf life of that product is twice that, and depending on what product it is, as far as if you were to take certified organic yogurt, and a production manufactured yogurt, put them on the counter at the same time,
mm-hmm.
you're going to see twice the shelf life in the certified organic stuff. The same
wow.
with meat. If you were to take a high CLA level organically fed grass-fed beef, put it on the counter, and do the same thing with a high stress, like say, what did we use? Oh, we use veal calf.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was that. Amazing. The shelf life was twice that of the other. And to me, that says one thing. We also took one of our drive-through companies and left it on the shelf the whole meal. And you know, the other products were like rotten to the point where we have to throw them out. That one meal stayed on the counter for 2 weeks, and some of the product in that meal never changed.
Really?
Because there wasn't enough energy, there wasn't enough enzyme bacteria in there to even see it rot, you know.
Oh, my God.
So,
which means it putrefies in our stomach.
That's it. Yep, and I'm doing a presentation on Tuesday night, and it's called Digestion and Depression. Is there a link? And we're onto something here that absolutely connects those two.
Now, how would enzymes, let's talk about this, we got just a couple minutes,
yep.
connect with dopamine, serotonin, and norepinephrine?
Exactly. The serotonin production is one of the greatest things when you're digesting properly.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is produced in through your digestive tract, primarily the large and small intestines. It is taken up in the brain. So when you go to your doctor and you explain to him that you're just under severe stress, totally depressed, he puts you on a medication that actually supplements the serotonin in some cases. I'm not talking all of them, but in some cases, the more commonly used ones will supplement that. That leaves your digestive tract, again, not flexing, not able to produce that. You're supplementing it synthetically. So to me, there's a direct link between eating right and feeling good, and that is the link. And
so what do you eat to make your serotonin go up?
You just do a better job in digestion and absorption. That means make sure your pH is right, make sure the enzymes are there, make sure you're eating fruits and vegetables as much as possible. Just eating very well will increase the production of serotonin.
I just want to touch for a second here. We've got about 4 minutes.
Yep.
But a lot of people don't realize that when they take antibiotics,
yep.
they must do something about their enzymes or they get the systemic yeast problem.
Absolutely.
That does such bad things.
Yes, yes. And you can almost plan on those people that have had that experience in the past. They go, oh, no, not antibiotics because I know
yeah.
it can happen, right?
Yeah.
Our product will, in many cases, relieve that sort of thing where we're putting not just yogurt, but the product itself orally. And in severe cases, we're opening the capsules and putting it and having the client put it in vaginally. And within hours, that the relief comes that way.
What about for diabetes and, plaque in the arteries, that kind of inflammation?
Diabetes, to me, the research I've done on diabetes is an increase in uric acid. Uric acid comes from tomatoes, tomato-type products. I mean, that's one of the big sources of uric acid. Yeah, and people that eat a lot of that sort of stuff, spaghetti, pizzas, I mean, that's great stuff. But if your digestion isn't correct, then you're not able to digest and evacuate the uric acid, it'll build up in your joints.
Is that tomatoes off the vine or just the kind of
tomatoes off the vine would have it, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and so if you're eating tomatoes off the vine but still not digesting properly, uric acid will build up in those joints and crystallize. And so what I recommend is black cherry juice concentrate and omega-3 oils. You need to put something in there that'll break down the uric acid, which black cherry juice will do, and then lubricate those joints, and you'll find tremendous relief in a very short time.
How much black cherry juice do you use?
I'm using, again, that's an organic product. The normal recommendation was 1 ounce twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
People that really have hard times walking, hips, knees, and elbows, I put them on 4 for 3 days. That really does a number on the crystallized uric acid, and then increase the omega-3 tablets by 3 times for that medicinal dose period also.
And what about etocopherols with it? Do you suggest that too?
Not real familiar with part of it. Yeah. One thing I want to stress, though, back on the digestive and depression, right? Normally people that are stressed out and are depressed don't eat right.
Uh-huh.
And normal people that don't eat right are depressed.
Yeah.
It is a direct circle.
They eat a lot of carbs and stuff.
Right. And so when you succumb to the fact that you have depression, you go to your doctor and he says, I'll put you on this medication. So you've actually admitted that you have this problem.
Right.
I'm telling my clients that it is more of a physical problem than it is a psychological problem. You battle the physical part, the digestive part, the psychological problem goes away.
That's right. Well, we're out of time. I can't believe it, Roland. I could talk for another couple hours with you.
Yeah.
Thanks for being with us, and give us your website if you would.
Yes, it's Nutrafix.com, and it's Nutrafix.com, and certainly there's a list of products there that we know will help people out. We do have an enzyme package there, probiotic package in different sources. We have probiotics for cows, sheep, goats, and pets.
All right. So
if anyone has any questions and wants to talk more on this, we'll be happy to give whatever information we've got out to them.
Thanks for being with us, Roland. And you're going to come back.
Absolutely. Look forward to seeing you in September.
All right. Take care, dear. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.